Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 o'clock hour, and here we go. So there is a baseball team playing a game tonight. Maybe we'll just stay away from all the distraction that's going on with a new president and CEO. And, of course, we don't know if the GM of the century, Alex Anthopoulos, will stay with the team. And I'm hardly being sarcastic. Name me the last time a Maple Leaf or Raptor executive was as beloved as Alex Anthopoulos is right now in this city. But let's talk about the team that has allowed Anthopoulos the wiggle room to maybe get the deal of a lifetime. And if it's not in Toronto, it's going to be somewhere else. I mean, it's not a GM job, but LA Dodgers gave Andrew Friedman $35 million over 5 years to leave Tampa Bay, St. Pete's, that ugly stadium, and come to LA and be the president. And no one shovels snow in California. Yeah, I know, in 10 years, water's going to come out of your taps on odd-numbered days because they don't have any more. But anyway, he's in L.A. So we're to the point after another series sweep. 29-6 was the total score. 11 home runs. The Tigers didn't even have to face, arguably, the Jays' two most consistent starters in the series. David Price, former Tiger, and Marco Estrada, future Tiger. I can't prove that. I'm just a guess. We're to the point, though, where nothing surprises anyone anymore about the Toronto Blue Jays. Their month of August is one of the greatest in the history of the sport. And the sport's been around a long time, right? Two world wars, the embarrassing and disgusting only white people can play thing, and hitters using table legs and wearing newsboy caps. I made one of those three up. You decide which one. But it's incredible when sport happens and nothing surprises you. It's kind of scary. Because then it means you're waiting for that inevitable breakdown. We all said it. Andrew said it on a different show. I said it on a different show. Hey, this Jays team post Price and Tulowitzki, they'll lose three in a row. They'll lose 4 out of 5. Will they? There's only 29, 30 games left. All of us are starting to believe there may not be a stumble or a stutter the rest of the regular season, that this is who this team is, and more importantly, will be until game one of the ALDS.
Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360, sportsnet.ca/590, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 o'clock hour. Welcome to it. Richard Justice is the national correspondent. Sounds important and expensive. I don't know what we're paying to get him on. For MLB.com, he'll join us in about 8 minutes. Want to get your reaction as well to these Blue Jays and what you can compare this to that you've seen in Toronto sport. Been a long time out in the wilderness where you can just, hey, go the Bobby McFerrin route. Don't worry. I don't mean make weird noises when you're at parties with your friends, but don't worry and just be happy. But there's going to be worry. There's going to be angst. The weird thing is we're at August 31 and none of it's happened yet. Like there has not been a period in time where you go, oh, don't like the way this is trending. I'm getting worried about those. I don't like the look of those Yankees. And you should be concerned about the Yankees. They haven't gone away and disappeared. They had about an average August. They had a great July. The Blue Jays had an average July. The Blue Jays had an even greater August. And the Yankees kind of stayed the course and had an average August. But things are turning a little bit. They got great pitching this weekend in Atlanta. Nathan Eovaldi looks like he could. Like, I'd feel good about Nathan Eovaldi on the hill during a playoff game. I'd feel great about Luis Severino being on the hill. And Tanaka's Tanaka. Duke is Duke and Tanaka's Tanaka. What are you going to do? But I don't know what to compare this Blue Jays team to when you're headed for the playoffs and the inevitable 22-year drought ends. Because we all know they're making it now. And that's not to put a hex or jinx on the Toronto Blue Jays and what they are. I don't think you can right now. Because we sort of went into the, hey, what if this isn't quite what we think it's going to be for all of August? After the July 31st non-waiver deadline, and they acquire David Price the day before, Ben Revere that day, earlier acquisitions, obviously, of Hawkins and Tulowitzki. The biggest thing people were debating yesterday, I was riding in someone else's car, and the debate obviously was about Troy Tulowitzki batting fifth. Like, that's where we're at. People concerned that all of a sudden if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I know there's enough people that love the idea of Tulowitzki batting leadoff. Hey, it's another at bat for him. That's great. Then bat Josh Donaldson leadoff. He's their best hitter. Oh, you can't do. Why not? What's the difference? Why doesn't Mike Trout bat leadoff? There's a reason your leadoff guy is often fast, often can get on base, and often has pop. And it wouldn't shock me. And people would say, hey, this is something Troy Tulowitzki, he said he didn't ask for this. He's going to say that. He has to say that. I would bet you dollars to donuts, Troy Tulowitzki, if it was brought up to him, said, sure, love to bat fifth. Who's not going to want to bat fifth in this lineup? Right after Edwin, the way Edwin's crushing the ball right now, put me right there. You know, a lot of RBI opportunities. Players care about RBI. You may not necessarily care about runs batted in as a stat that's really meaningful that tells you what kind of season a guy's having, but it still factors in. The most runs do win the game. Runs and RBI do matter. We just think they matter a little less than we might have 7-8 years ago. But I don't doubt Troy Tulowitzki's happy batting fifth. Ben Revere's probably happy batting leadoff. How long it stays, I don't know. Who's to say? Either way, you've got a team where that's the biggest issue we're talking about. The biggest issue is, I don't know, who's the fourth starter in the ALDS? Do you know how many teams are worried about that? That if the Angels make the playoffs, they have no idea. Their rotation is a crap show right now. Texas has the same issue. Outside of Gallardo, no one's really pitching consistently that anybody likes. The one thing I think I bring up that as a comparison point for this, you can call us 416-870-0590, star 590, Richard Justice in a little bit. From MLB.com, 5 minutes to be exact. And Mark Kelso, bottom of the hour, we'll get into some NFL football. There's lots happening, especially with the Bills with Fred Jackson getting cut. But people have brought up the Maple Leafs at the start of the 93 season, and they should. That was incredible. Yet we were in October of 93, and with the ALCS against the Chicago White Sox, who many observers picked the White Sox to beat the Blue Jays that year. We don't tend to remember that. That White Sox team looked pretty dangerous, pretty powerful. Jack McDowell had a better regular season than any Blue Jays starting pitcher did in 1993. And they hammered him in both starts. If I remember correctly, they won Game 3 and Game 4 with Wilson Alvarez on the hill, and it might have even been Jason Bure. I can't even remember who won the starts for the White Sox. With the White Sox series in the ALCS and the Phillies in the World Series, we barely noticed the Blue Jays going 10-0. And run differential's really tricky. Small sample size doesn't tend to tell you very much. It doesn't. And I don't like using it as a overall barometer even as to how a team has played all year. A lot of people like to point to run differential and say, the Oakland A's haven't been that bad a baseball team this year. If you're 57-74, you've been an unlucky baseball team that you're not closer to 500, but it doesn't mean you're a very good one. And their fans are telling them that they aren't a very good team as well with their typical non-attendance. What can we compare the August 15 Blue Jays to that we've seen? The 92 team, the 93 team, even the really good 85 and 87 teams never had a month like this. Never had a month where you could go 22-5. Never had a month where your run differential could be over 90. I found a few examples of a run differential over 90 in a month. And think about it. 30 teams play every year. And 26 teams used to play every year. And 20 teams used to play every year. And we're talking 120 years of baseball to compare this to. Jeremy, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hey, so I'm 25 years old, born in 1990, never seen anything like this. Not, like, personally that I could compare it to in the Toronto sports market. What's happening right now, just the atmosphere, period, it's something different. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, like, you look at these run differentials, like, these are other professional baseball teams with good players and relatively decent pitching staffs that they're just bludgeoning to death. Like the Angels and the Rangers, they've got a chance to make the wild card and make the playoffs. And
yeah,
like, I mean, they look like a rookie ball team against the Jays.
Like, and here's what they're doing. Thanks for the phone call. The teams that come in or the teams that are on the road look so bad and none of them are great. Okay. Like, let's take the teams they've obliterated since the Price trade. Take Minnesota even. Like the Twins left. Do you remember what that was like when the Twins left? And we're going, the Twins aren't even going to, they're not going to win 90 games. They might lose 90 games. Like the feeling you get, and that was only, those were 5-1, 3-1, 9-7, and 9-3. So we just assumed the Twins would go on this unbelievable tailspin and be finished. Guess what? They haven't. They found a way to rally because they're not playing the Blue Jays anymore. They're a game and a half out of the wild card, and they've won 9 of their last 11 games. I didn't expect that, but it goes to show you we're getting a false principle of how would I put it, analysis when teams are done playing the Blue Jays. How'd you feel about the Angels last weekend? Doesn't look like a very good team, does it? And they haven't lately, admittedly, also. They've lost 8 of their last 10 and are sinking like a stone. That's a 500 team. You tell me how a team that has Mike Trout, has Albert Pujols having a renaissance year, has Garrett Richards back to form, how that team, Jared Weaver back healthy, good bullpen, how that team is only 65-65 is mind-blowing. And then we have Detroit. And Detroit looked like the team. The Jays hadn't swept Detroit since that 43-119 season in 2003. It's been 12 years. Tigers have had a lot of playoff games, tons of playoff games since 2006. That team left yesterday, tail between the legs, collectively, all 25 guys. Doesn't look like they're going to win another game the rest of the year. But guess what? They'll find a way. That's just what Toronto's doing right now. Guy and Ajax, and then Richard Justice will join us. Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah, it's funny listening to these younger people calling in. They've never seen anything like it because the city's been a bunch of losers for 20 years. But, you know, I'm a little bit older than that. I was actually at the Carter game, and, you know, you can't really compare this to anything. All I see is maybe the best team in baseball, and really their record doesn't truly indicate how good they really are. I mean, this team blew about 15 games themselves. Had these trades been made a couple weeks even earlier, we'd be way up there. And what do you think of this, Brady? The Jays and the Mets in the World Series.
That's what I want. That's the one I want. Yeah.
Topolis gets Dickey over Syndergaard in the series clincher. I'll hang up and listen.
In the Game 7. The Mets rotation is the one you don't want to face in the playoffs. It's incredible to think that. Because 1-4, the Dodgers aren't as threatening. You're going to eat your lunch potentially with Kershaw and Greinke. But why have the Dodgers not won the past 3 World Series? Because someone's gotten to Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, in the NLDS, in the NLCS. They've yet to get there. The excellent national correspondent for MLB.com, kind enough to join us. Great follow on Twitter, too. We'll give you his handle in a sec. Richard Justice back on Brady and Walker. Thanks for taking the time. We really, really appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it. Thank you for having me.
Happy to. I'll tell you what, the Jays, we were trying to come up with, we can't come up with many months in Major League Baseball history. I know everybody loves to hype the hometown team and the hometown radio guy gets a little bit like a cheerleader, but we don't know what to do with this, Richard. They could go 22-5 tonight for the month of August, and the run differential right now is a plus 89. Like they're spanking teams. They're not just getting by. They're not some kind of cardiac kids. Can you compare this to any kind of month you've seen? Even though you've seen put together streaks, they often do it with a lot of one-run wins and a lot of extra inning wins. That's not what this team's doing.
Right. The only thing I can remember comparable is 84 Tigers, and that was early in the season, 35-5. But you're right, this team is just pounding people. I mean, it looks like a video game when you look up at the scoreboard every night and see what they're doing. And I'll tell you, the thing that's so good about this is a reminder that when you put a team together, that it's not one offseason. I had general managers tell me, hey, I tried to do it one offseason. It's not two, it's three. You just keep building. You don't give up. And you looked at how the team was layered together, you know, one offseason, Dickey and Burley, and then Martin and Donaldson, and then adding Tulowitzki and David Price, and the bullpen, the bench help. Alex Anthopoulos has done one hell of a job.
Early returns on hiring Mark Shapiro. This team had flirted, whether embarrassingly or openly or whatever, with Dan Duquette and Kenny Williams last offseason. Shapiro wasn't mentioned. This comes around. The Dolans seem okay with him going. They didn't ask for compensation. And Shapiro, it sounded like, laid the bridge for this a couple of years ago and said, yes, somewhere, as I head into my 50s, I might want to work somewhere besides Cleveland. What's your take on the early returns in terms of whether this is a excellent hire for the Blue Jays or not?
I heard someone say on the radio this today, someone that knows Mark well, as good a baseball man as the Jays think he is, they're going to find out he's better. And as good a man as they think he is, they're going to find out he's better. I'm not objective on the subject of Mark Shapiro. I've known him since he was a little kid running through the Orioles clubhouse. You know, his dad, Ron Shapiro, represented, was one of the most respected agents in the game. I think this is a guy who's bright. I think he's got leadership qualities. He is, I guarantee you, a man of integrity. I love Paul Beeston. Mm-hmm. And if you've got to replace Paul Beeston, I don't know that you could do any better in terms of the kind of person you want representing a franchise. and a guy who has the knowledge and background that, Mark has. I mean, I just think in every on every level, it's a home run.
Yeah, there's some people suggesting, well, we should have a business guy, and he's the president, and the baseball guy's the GM. I'm like, if you got a guy who knows both, that's great. If you have a boss that knows all about web traffic, has some baseball background, and knows about writing too, or I do with radio on air experience and management, that those are great things. I don't know why we ask for diversity in candidates. We'd want to hire diverse and smart people, and there just seems to be some resistance to that from some who just think, well, he knows too much about baseball. He shouldn't be the president. I don't know what that is.
Well, what makes a great franchise? First of all, it's a winning team. And it's you walking in to the ballpark and having a great experience. It means that your beer is cold, that your hot dog, it tastes good. And Mark has dealt with all those things for all his adult life. And you hire good people and you empower them and you trust them. It's no different than hiring someone, a police chief or, you know, someone to clean the streets or anything else. Mark will hire good people. He knows he has a good front office. He knows he has a good general manager. And it's, I just think it's, we tend to overcomplicate it. And also Mark understands the data and all that. I mean, he's going to allow the fans to tell him, where are we short? Where would you like the experience of Rogers Center to be better? All of that stuff. But, you know, if the baseball team wins, it's going to be a good experience. So it does start there.
Does this there's been a lot of flux with general managers. I think we have four interim GMs right now, right? Seattle, the Angels, the Marlins, that they're all over the place. Is it concerning in Cleveland for Chris Antonetti, given he had a long relationship with Shapiro, 19 years and some before getting promoted? They've had a lot of budget constraints. The owner gives you the number, and that's pretty much how it works for every team, whether you're the Dodgers or you're the Indians. How good a job has Antonetti done there under Shapiro's tutelage? And is anybody worried? Everybody kind of worries a little bit. Sometimes the new boss is better than your old boss, but I think I'm quoting the Who there. But either way, how do you view what Antonetti's done and his security there now that Shapiro's leaving?
Yeah, you know, every little thing is connected to every little thing. And if I'm Chris, and maybe it had something to do with Mark leaving, I'm not sure about that because I think the Jays just presented fantastic opportunity, and some of the people I know best in baseball were craving to get that job. But there's a report in one of the New York papers today that the ownership there is looking to raise cash by selling minority shares in the team. You know, and there's nothing such so minority as being a minority owner in a baseball team. I don't know how easy that will be to do. But so I think when you look at the wake in the constraints that they have, as you mentioned, I think they've done a good job. I thought it's been a disappointing year. I thought last year, you know, in the playoffs, they were good enough to go to the World Series, you know, but you got to do it when the lights are bright, and they didn't do it. And they haven't done it this year. It's injuries, a lot of different things. To finish the answer, I think Chris Antonetti has done a good job.
It's, of course, Richard Justice joining us from MLB.com, national correspondent. Quietly here, because obviously there's been a lot of hype about the Blue Jays. People want to break a 22-year playoff drought, et cetera, et cetera. Quietly, the Yankees had a sweep of their own in Atlanta. Can I make the case the Yankees have kind of weathered the storm a little bit? They've gotten Severino into the reputation. He's been great. Pineda's back. Tanaka's worked through some inconsistency. Eovaldi, I'd give Eovaldi the ball in a playoff game to start. I'm not worried about him like we might have been 3 months ago. And with the exception of Mark Teixeira's injury that took him out, we're not sure how Teixeira's going to be with the injury for the rest of the year. The Yankees are still very much a threat. No one here wants to hear it, but they're not going away.
No, they're not going away, but there's so many unknowns in terms of age. You know, do you trust Nathan Eovaldi in September? I think Luis Severino, the kid's been their most consistent guy. What are you going to get out of Teixeira, A-Rod, Beltran? Ellsbury's not been himself. What are you going to get out of all those guys down the stretch? I mean, I think any fair assessment would look and say, A, the Blue Jays are better. But I think the Yankees, just in not making the playoffs last year, they've shown, I think, enough the last 3 years that they're going to weather a lot of storms, and whatever is there to be gotten in terms of talent is going to get it there. But when you look at their club, when you look at their pitching, you know, I don't think you trust it the way you trust some other teams. So I think there's no question the Blue Jays are better now, but, you know, you have a whole month, 5 weeks really, left, and that's why they play it out. But today Toronto's better, and that's funny when you look at the overall race. Like, the Royals, the Cardinals, the Blue Jays. Those are the three teams you look at and go, well, I'm going to have a little trouble finding weaknesses with those three teams. But it's funny, in every city there, they're fretting over, okay, that, this, that. That's part of the landscape of baseball today.
Yeah, you nailed it. The Yankees fans that are going to be Warriors think their team is old. The Astros fans that are worried about, again, there's another team on the cusp of something, think they're too inexperienced. So, I mean, you know, which would you rather be? Young, but, you know, you got Correa and Altuve, or would you rather have a Brett Gardner and an Alex Rodriguez and a Mark Teixeira go into a playoff series? It's everybody's going to have a different answer to that, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to mention the Astros, they would just like to get their guys back out there. Correa's four games in a row, and George Springer is hopeful to come off the disabled list in a week. So that's a huge part of it. Texas is a good example in that you watch them play for a week and you say, well, this team's as good as anybody. You see them another week and you say, this team can't play. So I think that's where we are. You know, the Angels are in free fall, but I think they know that every day we come in, if we can get it turned around, we've got a chance. We've got 16 teams within 5.5 games of the playoff berth right now. Mm. Hopefully that'll make for a nice, chaotic September.
There's with the extra wild card, this is year number 4 of it. It looks like collision course for the Pirates and the Cubs. Arrieta with a no-hitter last night. That was great drama. There's a lot of people wondering, is it fair? And I'm thinking, unless we're expanding this, I don't know a better way to do it. People are already saying, well, that's not much reward for teams that both might win 90, 92 games, Pittsburgh and Chicago, and then you got to play the team in your division. Is there any way around this? Do you cross over and not play a division rival and like they used to not be able to in the ALDS, NLDS? Do you see a way, or do you just say, listen, the teams know the system. It is what it is.
You know, I think it's working out exactly the way it was designed to work out, in that it was made to add, the second wild card was to put added emphasis on winning your division. You know, you had teams that would coast in and say, we don't care if we get in a wild card or division. Well, you care now. And for people that say it's not fair, well, guess what? The Cubs and the Pirates have a chance to keep playing. Not fair would be their season's over. In 1980, the Baltimore Orioles won 100 games. And they finished second 3 games out, and they were done. Their season was over. Now, that's not fair. The wild card, you know, in the NL wild card game in Pittsburgh last year, Hunter Pence of the Giants said, hey, look, we're playing in this game because we weren't good enough. We weren't better than the Dodgers. But this game gives us a chance to start over and have new life. And they took advantage of it. So no, this idea of reseeding the playoff teams, that's not going to happen. Now, I'll tell you what is going to happen. I do think there's going to be a third wild card team added in this next labor negotiations. The players very much want extra days off. They believe the players are getting worn down. I'm talking about the union representing the players. And there will be discussion of a 154-game season. Somewhere in there, there would be expanded playoffs because to make up the revenues. But I think the serious discussion is adding a third wild card team. You know, I don't know how you feel about that, but that would be the adjustment. Under a 10-team format, it's not going to change from this. I mean, because they want the division winners to be rewarded, regardless of whether your division is weaker than the NL Central or not.
Yeah, I think that still has to be there. You made me think of and I had to look it up to see the exact win total, but that 93 Giants team that was sort of a flash in the pan because the Braves were in their dominance, 103-59, and they missed the playoffs, finishing second. And then Philly beats Atlanta. Like, Atlanta's everybody's pick. We're going to get a Jays, Braves, you know, World Series rematch, and Philadelphia and Curt Schilling and Darren Dalton and John Kruk and those guys messed it up.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, you know, when we talk about unfairness, teams like that know what unfairness is.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh and Chicago will be perfectly happy to take the field in the wild card. Give it to them right now. They're ready to go.
You get a chance. Right.
Richard, great having you on. Really enjoy your stuff, and thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Justice joining us from MLB.com. You can follow along with him on Twitter at Richard Justice. He's correspondent for MLB.com. Has been for some time, and a good follow on Twitter. By the way, so we played Mark Shapiro earlier. A lot of Cleveland-centric questions. He said he wouldn't take any Blue Jays questions. He did have an answer for someone basically asking the appeal of the Toronto job, the infrastructure that is here in Toronto right now, and why he was sort of, he did mention that there was a call in around late July. So they've been working on this for a good 4 or 5 weeks, it seems, because we all know Rogers and Dave Dombrowski had at least one conversation. Dave Dombrowski was reported, had met actually with Guy Lawrence, Rogers CEO. Here's Mark Shapiro talking about the appeal of this Blue Jays job.
I don't think that you could look at, you know, pure payroll as a driver for the decision. It truly is a leadership position, you know, that I feel is a unique one for a lot of different reasons, which I'll talk about a couple months from now. But I think it's a unique one in, you know, just an incredibly different place that, you know, I think is going to afford us and me a chance to grow and develop. And that's really it. There really is no backstory. There's no contrast between Cleveland. I love and celebrate a lot of things about Cleveland, and I think there are some things I'm really excited to learn and celebrate in Toronto.
So there's Mark Shapiro. Whether there are more comments or not later on in the week, whether or not we're able to get him on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, you'll be the first to know if we do. Paul Beeston will exclusively join Jeff Blair on Primetime Sports at 4 o'clock today after Brady and Walker concludes. A few minutes here. I did see Mark Kellis is going to join us on the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about Tyrod Taylor starting in Buffalo, the end of Fred Jackson in Buffalo. No one saw that coming. But this concussion movie, I saw the preview for it today, the trailer, about 2 minutes long. Will Smith in it, right? And Peter King tweeted it out in his Monday Morning Quarterback this morning. Starting to read that a little bit more with preseason. Thankfully, blissfully, rolling to an end. I'm never excited when it starts. I'm always excited when it ends. I know. That's exactly right. Concussion is coming out in December, and it's based on almost purely a GQ article that was written in 2009. But the talk of CTE and the doctor who discovered CTE. So some of the clips of this, I do think this is going to be really intriguing. And I heard a lot of people buzzing about it this morning, saying, oh my, what will the NFL think about this? It really, there's not much stops the NFL machinery. If anything, remember the NFL had ESPN had playmakers, right? A show, fictional teams, fictional reporters, fictional everything, fictional general managers, fictional coaches. It was about as fictional as any given Sunday. And the NFL said after a year, because there were players doing drugs, doing steroids, doing illicit drugs, having affairs with teammates, having affairs with cheerleaders. These weren't just cheerleaders going to high schools and hanging out in cars. These were cheerleaders in the league, if you will, having relations with NFL players. So the NFL saw about 38 things wrong with the entire miniseries and said, there's no season two. We highly recommend, as your broadcast partner, you don't do a season two. If we did a racy NHL series here at Sportsnet, there's a good chance the NHL would come down and say, no, we don't, you know, in the best way Gilbert Gottfried could do it. We don't like this. Change it up. Put anything else on. Don't, more cards, more poker. Do anything but this. So they started shooting this about a year ago. Will Smith does play the lead character. Some of the other names are really intriguing. Like Alec Baldwin's in it, playing a doctor who's consulting with Will Smith. A lot of people have criticized Luke Wilson, who hasn't been in, like when I say he hasn't been in all that much, he hasn't been all that much that I've seen or that you've seen since Old School. Let's be perfectly honest. There's one Wilson brother that gets movies, and it's Owen. It's not Luke. I find it interesting, though, because there's an actor playing Mike Webster, the former Steelers center who was diagnosed with CTE. There's an actor playing Dave Duerson, who was the Bears safety on that Super Bowl shuffle team. Who also was in, he was in Lost, right? Yes, he was in Lost as Echo. He was fantastic in Lost. Adewale Ikunnuagbaya is Dave Duerson. So there's some real life names in this. What I think is going to be interesting is the trailer makes it look like the NFL is basically the law firm in the movie The Firm. Like you got your Wilford Brimley and your Ed Harris, and there's a lot of shadowy shots. Every time you see Will Smith's character walking at night, you're assuming he's about to get mugged. There's a lot of NFL attorneys like giving mean looks to Will Smith's doctor character. I'm just not sure this movie's going to be a big hit. I know everyone looks at it and says, hey, it's sports movies. You have to really look at the box office for sports movies. And we were doing that a little bit earlier on. Our producer, J.D. Bunkus, and me were poking in at this stuff. The Blind Side, and weirdly only because Sandra Bullock started getting Oscar buzz. And is that really a movie about sports? Or is that a movie about humanity? The story of the Ravens lineman. I don't think this is going to be a big hit. I don't think the NFL is going to, well, the NFL will sue because they don't like how they're being portrayed. It's just a bunch of shadowy guys with hats on who are basically dismissing the evidence of CTE in the brains of these two NFL players, notably Mike Webster and notably Dave Duerson. So we'll see where this movie goes. I'm not thinking it's going to be a massive hit. I'm not thinking it's going to finally be the Oscar Will Smith probably deserved with Ali and didn't get. I don't know, but nomination coming. Anything's possible. But it's out in theaters in December. Mark Kelso is the Bills radio color analyst. They move on from Fred Jackson. They cut him. They didn't offer him a pay cut. They simply cut him today. Many people feel he will, in hours, let alone brief period of days, hop on somewhere else and be a running back somewhere else. And yes, more on RG3, who looks like, some say, the third string quarterback to start the season. Certainly behind Kirk Cousins, possibly behind former Cleveland Browns first round draft pick, Colt McCoy. Why? What don't we know about this scenario with the Washington NFL team? It's Brady and Walker, 230, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. On your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Brady and Walker, welcome to it. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Here solo the vast majority of the week, unless big news happens. Although, I made a debut as a caller on the Friday mailbag, and apparently it was reasonably well-reviewed. So Andrew may do the same on Friday. I don't know where he is. I want to leave it that way. I've heard there's other Walker brothers in town, brothers, but I can't prove it. Well, follow his Twitter, Fan590Walker, to find out whether that's the case for sure or not. So the Buffalo Bills cut Fred Jackson, which caught a lot of people by surprise. It may even have caught some NFL GMs by surprise who will be very quick to snap up Fred Jackson. You look, over the last couple of years, has the position of running back diminished in terms of the superstar running back? What can he do for my team? Can I get to the playoffs with Maurice Jones-Drew? No. Chris Johnson? No. In prior years, LaDainian Tomlinson all the time? Not necessarily. But, and Sean Alexander? No, not always. It's unbelievable, really, to think, though, Buffalo probably had one of the better 1-2 punches, one of the more consistent 1-2 punches. This is post-Marshawn Lynch trade, when they traded Marshawn Lynch just to get him away from Western New York, basically. When they did that and then drafted C.J. Spiller, people said, well, you had a running back, now you've got another one. But Jackson and Spiller were two of the most consistent. That's one of the more consistent 1-2 punches. If you're going to have a 1-2 punch, not every team does. Seattle doesn't need it with Lynch. Green Bay hasn't needed it for a few years with a few of the guys they've got. Mark Kelso joins us now, Bills radio color analyst. One more game on the docket, and that's against the Detroit Lions on Thursday night. And then the Bullets go live. Colts and Patriots to start a two-game homestand on September 13th, September 20th. And Mark Kelso, Bills radio color analyst, joins us now on Brady and Walker. Thanks for taking the time to do this. But that sounds good, that when you see that Detroit game on the schedule this week, you know it's almost over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, thought it was over in Buffalo the other night, and those guys were done. You can see what happens when you add that fifth preseason game, because the Steelers have played in the Hall of Fame game, and I'm sure the Buffalo Bills players are certainly looking forward to teeing it up for real and putting the preseason behind them. I mean, there's a lot of still a lot of decisions that need to be made, but certainly the preseason is really, when you're a veteran player, it's for one thing and one thing only, and that's preparation for opening day. So you want to limit the chance for injury, and you think you want to get your team prepared and put yourself in some scenarios that you might not be able to replicate in practice, and then hope that you've covered all your bases here before opening day. But I think they're ready, but there are a few guys who will be putting out an awful lot of effort on Thursday night on both sides of the ball, for Detroit and the Bills that if they can make a couple more plays, might be able to earn themselves a roster spot.
Mark Kelce was kind enough to join us. 8 years in the NFL on all four of those Buffalo Bills Super Bowl teams in the early 90s. Give me your read on the quarterbacking, because it was excellent against Pittsburgh. How much of that were the Bills and their productivity on offense, the blocking of the offensive line, but both Manuel and Taylor and Sims all put up good numbers and all looked very in control of their individual offenses, as it were.
Yeah, and I mean, some of it has to do with the defense of the Steelers, too. I mean, they kind of fell off the map a little last year with some guys getting a little bit older. The Steelers did, and they certainly weren't bringing the pressure that they're accustomed to bringing in a regular season, and they weren't dialing up all kinds of zone blitzes, which has been a hallmark of Dick LeBeau's defenses, and he's not there, of course, this year, and they turned to I'm not sure who they even turned it over to, but he's not calling the defenses anymore. They always seem to get themselves in trouble, the Steelers do, when you extend the down on those guys, and they don't have a pass rush, and they didn't have a whole lot the other night, and Bill's offensive line was playing pretty well. Quarterbacks were able to sit back there, and then they're extending the back end of the defense and putting a lot of stress on them. So, I mean, I thought all the quarterbacks played well, all quite frankly, all four of them, I think they all played, and they all played well, and they had their moments. They threw the ball crisply, made good decisions, made some plays down the field, and it's a good problem to have. And obviously the competition level on the other side, and guys trying to make rosters, and you don't know if guys are the same collection of players that are going to be there defensively if they're trying to make a team. So they're not playing with the 11 that they may typically play with. But you can't. Deny the fact that those Buffalo quarterbacks did a good job. And the thing that actually to me that's most interesting and I think pleasing in my mind is that you listen to those guys talk about each other, and the reporters are constantly asking them about the other guy and the competition, and they never fail to compliment the other guy. I mean, the attitude and the psychology behind the whole thing. I mean, somebody's doing something on the back end there in the locker room, because those guys, and to a man, I mean, you talked about some of the receivers and catching balls downfield, and they're talking about the offensive line. So everybody was deflecting attention to their teammates, and the quarterbacks have been doing that admirably here the entire preseason, just talking about how the other one has played so well, and his competitive level makes me better, and completely different attitude from what I've seen in the past. But they've all three played well. There's no question about that. And now the question is, who do you go into the opening game with? It appears that they've made that decision, right?
Yeah, it sounds like Taylor. But the second quarterback has to be Matt Cassel, which it's tough for E.J. Manuel, but he might have the other guys haven't done anything to give up the one and two spots in the depth chart from what you're saying and from everything I've seen as well.
Yeah, but EJ's done everything I think you could expect him to do since he was benched for Kyle Orton last year. I mean, he's continued to improve. He still has a little bit of an arc in his throw, which I think is a little bit long. It causes the release to be just a split second slower than it could be if he speeds that arc up a little bit. But he threw with great accuracy and velocity, make great decisions. The Cleveland game was outstanding. A couple plays they made at the end of that game to culminate that victory, and he's played really well. Tyrod gives you certainly more improvisational ability. His athleticism is outstanding. He has no seat time, though, so now you're saying, okay, we're going to roll the dice. We think that we've seen enough of him. We know we can keep it close to the vest a little bit. I think they can control his desire to escape and his desire to create with his legs with some controlled stuff, whether it's a sprint out or a bootleg or a rollout or some quarterback read. But they're going to have to set up some scenarios between now and Indianapolis, quite frankly, that teach him to limit the opportunity to get hit downfield. Get yourself out of bounds. Make sure you slide when it's appropriate to do so. And don't try to escape out of the pocket. Move subtly in the pocket. Escape a little bit to your right or left, or back up a little bit, and then try to deliver the football downfield. But I think they'll do some things, particularly if he's going to be the guy to limit his opportunity for improvisational activity here early in the year, because you don't want to get a guy like that hurt. And then you got a guy in Matt Cassel who has done it for a lot of years and can be a good mentor to both he and EJ, quite frankly. And because it seems like the quarterbacks of the future are going to be would be Tyrod and EJ if things continue to play out that way.
Yeah, yeah. Mark Kelso joins us on Brady and Walker. Thursday night, Bills and Lions wrap up the preseason. A week from next Sunday, it's the Bills hosting Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts at Ralph Wilson Stadium. You've seen a lot of Fred Jackson moments. You've been calling this team for a bunch of years now, so you've seen a lot of key moments. I don't doubt today was a tough day. Is it, to me, it seems as much... Yeah, there's money involved. Fred has a decent sized contract, but to me, LeSean McCoy, Mark, also, I'd look and say he deserves a certain amount of touches. You didn't trade him not to get the same amount of touches, and I've counted 696 touches in the last 2 years in 32 games, either rushing or receiving. And that's not counting even passes he was targeted for out of the slot. I would look and or out of the backfield. I would look and think he's getting 21, 22 touches of the ball per game. That's just more than anybody's been capable of for the Bills. Is it much about money as it is LeSean McCoy just is going to be a workhorse for this team, and it makes Fred Jackson not necessarily as important as he was?
Well, you know, I still think I kind of think he was critically important. I'm disappointed to see that happen, and particularly the guy that's given the organization so much. And I think that with the collection of guys and the fact that they haven't played together so for very long and not at all in a regular season game, I think the team chemistry and the foundation of your team and the leadership, the locker room leadership, is critical, and he's a foundational piece. And now they've just removed that foundational piece, and it will allow other guys to step up if in fact this is their final plan, which I don't know why it wouldn't be here, because I don't see him being out there very long. He certainly has some usable years in his legs, even though he's 34 years old. There's still, as an all-around guy, when he is healthy, he can still run the ball exceptionally effectively. He picks up the blitz, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So he's got a lot of assets, and there's nobody else right now on that football team that can do what he can do, save maybe LeSean McCoy. But I haven't seen it enough in the passing game that was exhibited in Philadelphia the last couple of years, because he's caught 25 or 30 balls, but they didn't utilize them to the level that Fred was used in Buffalo. But he's got, you know, it's disappointing, but I think as long as they sat in that meeting room and they said that we're going to do everything to make the team better, and if they feel that that's the piece that's going to make the team better, I don't know if they would have had consensus on that, but certainly a majority in that situation, and that's what they felt was the best thing that can happen. But certainly a sad day for the Buffalo Bills community and the organization, when you have a guy that's meant so much to the organization and after 10 years is probably going to be wearing another uniform next year.
Yeah, it's got some risk to it. We have a 30 seconds. I'm sure you don't doubt he ends up somewhere else and is on another team. The irony, of course, would be if a team like the Jets or a team like the Dolphins want him in there and he's coming back to the Ralph every season for a couple years in a row, maybe.
How about New England? He would perform the role of Marshall Faulk or of Kevin Faulk.
Yeah,
is the role that Kevin Faulk performed for. I mean, he was like, you know, the little engine that could in New England. He was a guy that made that offense go for years and years. And Fred is just like that. He can run the ball better than Kevin Faulk, quite frankly. But coming out of the backfield, working against linebackers, picking up the blitz, he's exactly what a guy like Bill Belichick would be looking for. And if they have room on their roster, you can bet that they would pick him up in that situation. Probably not with his salary. They'll probably wait till he clears. Mm-hmm. But then they'll try to sign him on the back end.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. Hey, have a great call on Thursday. And we look forward to talking to you once the regular season gets rolling, Mark. Always a pleasure having you on our show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a great day in Toronto.
Mark Kelso, Bills radio color analyst. 3 days away from the finale of the preseason, and of course, Bills Colts, and then Bills Patriots. By the way, nothing coming down today on the Tom Brady versus NFL front from the court, but it's going to tomorrow, or they could not agree on a settlement. The judge has to go one way or the other here, because maybe no surprise, there wasn't going to be a settlement. And yeah, Fred Jackson with LeGarrette Blount, Brandon Bolden, Jonas Gray with that one great game last year. That'd be fascinating. I like that line of thinking from Mark Kelso. 3 o'clock hour on the way. We'll talk about the Yankees and the threat they still are coming out of the gate at 3 o'clock. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.